This is the Joy of Gaming. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast, episode 29. I'm your host, Rich Lepore, and I'm here with
Jordan Alseca
and Tim McNeil.
And on this episode, we're going to be talking about co-op video games. We've all been big fans of co-op gaming. In fact, I don't know about you guys, but I like it way better than competitive multiplayer.
Most of the time, that's true for me too.
Fairly.
It's something that we really enjoy, and it has its roots way back into the origins of the games we played as kids, and there's sort of a, I don't know, for me it really breaks down to classic co-op experiences and modern ones, just games like Sonic the Hedgehog being a classic example. You know, I mean, we don't think about it, but that was a co-op game, right?
Two was
yeah.
Right. But anyway, so we'll be talking about co-op gaming, lots of good stuff to talk about there. And then beforehand, we're going to do what we normally do, which is talk about the games we've been playing, as well as some news. You have some good news for us this time, Jordan?
I have news. There's not been a lot going on. It's summer.
Grr.
I mean, there are things. There's stuff. We'll see if it's interesting or not when we talk about it.
Grr. Ellen Page. Grr. Okay. All right. She's always in the news somehow when it comes to video games. I think we will start with you, Jordan. What have you been playing, man?
A lot of the same, but I've played some things. I finished the Tiny Tina DLC for Borderlands 2.
Okay, but you'll probably talk about that in co-op.
I would say it's a fitting ending to the series, but...
Is it really, even though they're playing characters in it?
It's about one of the characters, and it deals with events that happened in the main game, and it caused all of us that I was playing with to tear up at the ending. It was a very sad ending.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And for a game that's maybe equal parts... comedy, maybe 75% comedy, 25% drama in, as far as plot, right?
Yeah, but comedy can have the best drama, usually, sometimes.
All right.
But yeah, I finished that, and it was a really good DLC pack, and I don't really have much more to say. I mean, I've talked a lot about Borderlands, and I mean, it's a more fantasy setting, and there's a bunch of mini, or side quests that are fantasy-based. Like, there's a whole Game of Thrones side quest.
Come on. Is there?
You gotta go slap Prince Jeffrey.
Oh my god, I bet you they had so much fun making
and
that.
And he's guarded by the canine and the molehill.
So, okay, I mean, what other ones did they have?
Like, the mountain?
Oh, gotcha.
What are some other throwbacks?
There's references to everything. There's Doctor Who references, Star Trek references, Lord of the Rings references.
Of course.
And it's everything that you could think of pop culturally. They said that basically everyone had a side quest they wanted to make for this one. And it is full of quests.
Awesome.
So it's
I almost want to just skip right to that. What is it recommended for?
Because it's set after the main plot.
Oh, okay. Okay.
What do you mean, what's it recommended for?
Like, what level? Players?
I mean, again...
Like, can I play just the main plot and then that, or...?
I mean, you could play it, really, and it depends, because it depends on what playthrough you're on and what... Because the way the levels work in Borderlands is it's set to your level when you get there. In
right, but I have heard, though, that there are some... areas that they still recommend for higher level players just because of equipment and stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, the enemies are harder on the whole, but mm-hmm. it depends. I play it almost exclusively with other people now. But I mean, it does work alone. It's all relative. So I've been playing that. I've been playing a lot of the Lego games just because they're...
Love the Lego games. Well, you've had a lot of... It's summer.
They're time consuming.
Yeah.
They're very much that, so
did you pick any new ones up, like Lord of Rings or anything?
No, all I've played is Rich lent me Lego Harry Potter 1 over a year ago.
What up?
And I finally 100%ed that.
That game is awesome.
And then I bought Lego Star Wars 3 and Lego Harry Potter 2.
How are you in Potter 2?
Not very far.
It's not nearly as good, right?
I haven't played much of it.
Anyway.
I've mainly been playing Star Wars 3, which is probably one of my least favorite Lego games.
But it's Star Wars.
It's Star Wars, but the ground assault is just awful.
They're so generic. I watched you play that whole level, and I was like, wow, it's just like a grid of shit to fight.
It's basically an RTS along the level of Brutal Legends.
Well, I mean, I'd say the Brutal Legend is more complex on the strategy port, though, in a big way.
I mean, there are strategy things to do. You need troops to fire at gold things, and you got to take out shields. It's just, you know, it's like, it's an RTS where you're running around as one guy, and the enemies can't actually take your bases. You can just take theirs.
So there's really no threat, right?
It just takes a while. And if I want to get 100% in LEGO 3, I have to do 32 of those missions after the main plot.
Wow. What is that? How does that work? How's that set up?
Well, because there are some of them that are in the main plot, and then there are some where you can take over a planet. There are 16 planets in the game, and you can take them over either for the Separatists or for the Republic. So there
to get
are
a gold
bricks
brick for each of those.
For each transition and for fully making it one and the other. So you have to fight through all the missions. So that's 32 ground missions total that you have to play through. In addition to the rest of the game?
Like six? No, I mean, how many are there in the game? Would you say six?
I mean, there's maybe 8 or 9 of them in the main game. We're
going to say, Tim, sorry.
I hate when they add botched strategy things into games because they're so bad.
I'll give you an example. Great example. Assassin's Creed Revelation.
Yeah, I was thinking that same thing with the tower defense on that.
Hates
it's so
that.
Bad. Yeah. It's just like, what's horrible about it is it's unwinnable most of the time, too. It's like some of the stuff where it's just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. I have troops out the whole time. I'm killing everything I sit there, and it's not even close.
But you can just kill the leader in that, fortunately. Like in Revelations, you can just go kill the leader after they win.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's just like, this is so pointless.
No, that's the only way to do that, I think. It's just, I mean, imagine if you could kill the leader in 3 minutes. And then if it takes 30 to defend the place, I mean, it's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
So I'm, I think, 83% in LEGO Star Wars 3 at this point.
Nice. Have you played through the full campaign yet?
Yeah, I finished all the story missions. I'm true Jedi. Well, I've done all the true Jedi. I'm looking for all the mini kits right now. And then I'm going to have to do the ground assault missions.
Yeah.
Which are meh. But what are you going to do?
Well, you want 100% it. Yeah, there aren't that many games that are fun enough. And you know, it's not that it's easy to 100% the LEGO games. I wouldn't say it's easy. But it's all obtainable with time, as opposed to some games where it's like really challenging.
I've also been playing LEGO Pirates because I'm playing that with my girlfriend though, so that's going a lot slower.
Right.
On the whole, but
that's one of my few 1,000-point games.
It's a solid one. It doesn't have as many of the bells and whistles as some of the other ones do, but I think that's fine.
It's tight.
It's straightforward.
It's tight.
Streamlined is what it is.
Yeah.
So there's that. I've also been trying to play more Metal Gear Solid 3. And I'm just having trouble getting into it.
Really?
I don't know. It's all the fact that it is set earlier downgrades a lot of the stuff from Metal Gear Solid 2. And
it does, but it doesn't though. Like that's the thing. Like it makes it like I think there's two categories what you're talking about there. So in one hand, you're talking about ostensibly like what it appears. So like because it's back in the day and they didn't have like digital this and digital that. Like they make it more, you know, supposedly downgraded, you know what I mean? Like less sophisticated, but in other ways they give you equipment and techniques and camouflage and other tools in your arsenal that in some ways gameplay mechanic wise are more advanced, you know?
Some ways, but I think it's harder to tell what the bad guy's range of vision is and how camouflaged is camouflage, and sometimes they walk right up on you. And
I was telling Jordan, Tim, that he's lucky. He doesn't even know how bad it used to be with regular Snake Eater. No subsistence when you didn't have 360 control of the camera. Yeah. Did you play it like that?
I played it that way, yeah.
I don't know. I just think...
I didn't think it was too bad. I didn't kill anybody the entire game, though.
You did a full stealth playthrough.
Full stealth playthrough.
Oh, my God.
I always do full stealth in Metal Gear Solid games.
That is freaking unbelievable. I heard it in Metal Gear 3. It's really hard.
Well, what's cool about it isn't... I mean, how spoiled are you on Metal Gear Solid 3 stuff?
Not very.
Okay. Oh, never mind then.
Again, as far as I can tell, it seems like it's just a straightforward spy story as opposed to 2, which was a very artistic game as far as, like, I think...
Oh, this game is
like
extremely artistic.
I think as, like, video games is art.
I'm telling you. Think about the final boss and the
The final battle. The boss battles are what make Metal Gear Solid 3.
And there is some unbelievably striking things in the way that the mechanics of the game contrast with the characters and like make the point visually that are stunning.
I mean, I'll see. I'm not that far into it. I just think that as far as using the video game genre as art, Metal Gear Solid 2 is better than anything I've seen. So I don't know. I'm going to give it more of a chance. It's just hard to get into, especially
it
after
is.
Finishing
it,
the full Metal Gear
I had
Solid
like,
2.
I had like 3 false starts on that game.
So there's that. And... what else? The Steam Summer Sale's going on.
Oh, tell me about it. I love this shit.
stuff's on sale.
Well, okay, I mean, tell me some stuff you saw, stuff you want to buy.
Yeah, I mean, the only games I bought were Antichamber and Amnesia.
Okay.
How much is Amnesia off?
Actually, it was down to $4.
Really? I might get that.
Today.
It's a rather dark descent, though, Tim. Are you sure you can handle it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
I haven't played much of that. And Antichamber I played a little bit of, and it's apparently you only get an hour and a half to play the game.
Did you end up feeling compelled to go on to Facebook and typing mind and then an equal sign and then blown?
No. But I do like it so far. The puzzles are pretty trippy. I need to get more into it because I got it over my birthday weekend and people were up, so I didn't want to play too much of it.
It's one of those games where I think you probably get a lot more out of it if you mire yourself in it, you know?
Probably.
I think it's a thing you kind of got to do just in one go, you know?
Yeah. So those are the games. I also got, like I said, it was my birthday this past week. And
happy birthday, Jordan.
We had a bunch of people came over, and I don't even know how it came up. I was mentioning that there was a game on a podcast, Heartthrob, that sounded like a lot of ridiculous fun. And Tim, for some reason, had it.
Out of the blue. Yeah. What we were talking about is that podcast.
Flip the Table.
And they do
they do bad board games and they just play through them. And that was their game of the year.
Like literally the worst game, supposedly.
Huh? No, that was their best game they played all year.
Of bad games, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are games from the 80s and 90s. And and Tim went and got it and we played it. And then we played it some more the next day with fewer of us. But what it
are
is,
you serious?
Yes, we played it again. Well, Zach's girlfriend came over and she thought it sounded awesome and she was right. So we played it again. But what it is you play, it's a game for teenage girls ostensibly from the 80s where you get, there are 60 cards with guys on them from the 80s. And you
That's
pick,
pretty limited, only 60?
Well, you only pick three per game and you put them in like these holders. And so the goal of the game is you pick which guy you think is the cutest, and then you guess which guys your friends are going to say is the cutest. And so you score points. But then as the game goes on, there are four decks of cards, and you learn things about the guys. And so you find out more about them, like, oh, he might be president of the 4-H club, or he passes X-rated notes in class. You know, things like this where,
ooh,
does that change your opinion? Does it change your friends and you're voting and trying to get the most points? And really, you have to play it like a role-playing game. And pretend
if you're not a girl.
Yeah, I mean, and pretend you're 14-year-old 80s girls. That's the important. You have to be in the 80s. And you just play it, and you make fun of each other, and you make fun of the guys because they look ridiculous.
Well, they have bad haircuts, you know.
Oh, they have. Well, there's more than that. But it's just so much fun.
Were there any of the guys that, like, Liz and Kelsey were actually swooning over?
Kelsey was one of them. I forget which one.
I forget his name, too.
Some of them.
He was the quarterback.
Yeah, there was a quarterback.
There you go.
And then there were some guys that looked like serial killers, and the descriptors did not help them look like. Like, one of them wanted to own a hog farm. That did not seem very kosher.
Weird. Okay.
All
right.
So it was a lot of fun. It was more fun.
I won both times.
Yeah, Tim did win both games. Tim was on fire.
Wow.
This
Tim knows. Actually. Tim knows what the girls like.
Tim won like
he brings
eight
all
board games
the boys
in
to the yard.
Yeah, I only lost one that entire night.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But it was a good night.
Well, one was a co-op win.
Well, right. Yeah. Co-op wins are fine.
I mean, but every single time we played Resistance, my side won.
Yeah.
Was it both sides, too?
Yeah, it was Spies and
Mercs.
Resistance. Yeah.
I didn't win a single game of Resistance this weekend. We played it again. You know what the worst kind of game of Resistance is? The kind where the spies never get sent on a mission, and you're a spy, and you're just like, well, I can't really do anything here, can I?
I was playing it one time, and literally the first three missions, and there were no spies. And so it's just like, well, Resistance won.
Yeah, that's what happened. And it's like, well, that was barely a game.
Well, I mean, yeah, sometimes I bet you, like, in life, people get lucky, right?
Yeah. It happens. So that's what I've been playing. How about you, Tim?
Well, I have not been playing much. I have been vacationing a lot lately, and then I was playing board games all with Jordan the other day. Most of the time, I really only get to play games extensively for, like, Friday night and Saturday. And so that's what I've been taking up the past couple of weekends. So I played a little bit more of The Last of Us. I'm very, very close to the end with it. I'm going to finish that tomorrow.
What section are you in? You in the winter yet?
Yeah, I'm at the end of winter.
How is winter? I mean, without spoilers, because I'm right before that.
I mean, I don't know how to answer that question.
I mean, okay, is it cool artistically? How's the story progressing?
I mean,
are you really excited about what's coming next?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see what's going on. It's a good game all around. I don't know if it's like the best game of the generation, but it's people are saying.
Yeah, I don't get that necessarily either.
Again,
without spoilers, but the part that leads right into winter is the one part of the game where I was like, that's total bullshit.
Okay. Well, is that right after the university?
Yeah, it's right at the end of the university part.
Okay.
And you'll get there and you'll be like, they're not going to answer this at all with how this goes from here, and it's kind of annoying.
And they won't.
And I think it's the one part of the game where you really have to go, all right, I'll give you that.
I see. Sometimes they, it's like the Deus Ex Machina. Yeah, I get it.
They've said they want to do story DLC, and some people are saying they want to see Ish's story, who's like the cave rat guy that you read the notes from. I'd much rather see like a section there where it explains what the fuck happened, because there's so much questionable in that part. But we'll talk about that more down the road. Anyway.
But yeah, so I haven't beaten that yet. And usually I've been playing Civilization V a lot.
Oh, really?
Just because I downloaded that a while ago, and I just hadn't started it, and it's something where you just kind of get stuck with in a while. But I've been pacing myself with it, which I'm kind of surprised, because most of the time that's a game that I'm just like, oh, I'll start playing, and it's like, wow, it's midnight. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only $4 on Steam, too.
I was thinking about that. I picked it up there. It was 75% off when I got it.
That's killer. There's a lot of deals on Xbox Live, too. Have you noticed this?
Yeah, they've been trying to push it, I think, the same sort of thing as trying to get the downloadable stuff with it.
Yeah, they're getting on the Steam bandwagon with the 50 and 75% off deals. It's nowhere near the kind of rock-bottom pricing Steam has, but it's in that ballpark. You know, there are a lot of games, like I got Hitman for $10 and stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll be talking about Xbox in a little bit. They're making the news again.
Oh, good.
So I've been playing that a bit. It's
I like that.
It's good. I mean, it's Civilization. If you're a fan of Civilization, you'll play Civilization.
Did you play Civ Rev?
I didn't. I played it a little bit.
I played
it for like 20 minutes.
I have a friend. Shout out to Elliot, and he loves Civ Rev. He's got like, I think if there's DLCs, he's got more than 1,000 points. If there's not, he's got a straight 1,000. Mm-hmm. And this dude still plays it all the time. It's like his go-to strategy game. You know how you are with certain games, Tim?
Yeah.
You just go back to them and back to them. He's that way with that game. It is probably that and Skyrim / Oblivion are like his favorite games ever, if I had to guess. I mean, he loves Civ Rev.
It's weird. Civ Rev, from what I played a little bit, it kind of reminded me of Advance Wars Dual Strike. Uh-huh. And like, Advance Wars 1 and 2 and Days of Ruin are much more strategic than Dual Strike is. Dual Strike, it's like, all right, whoever gets their first overpowered thing is going to win. But there's so many overpowered things that you can do like any of them. And so there's lots of options, and there's sort of a balance in the overpower. And as opposed to doing like, you know, small advances, it's just like, I got to get here first, and then I pretty much have won.
Well, if you want to, pretty much, or absolutely every time.
And a Dual Strike
event,
pretty much every time.
Okay.
Because you get two consecutive turns with your superpowers.
Okay.
So it's like my superpower hits you, I got a turn, and then this other superpower hits you and I got a turn. So even if they counterattack, they're countering attack with, you know, vastly weakened forces.
It's an obliterator. Yeah. I get it.
Especially like my team was always using Olaf, and I want to say his name was Drake. I can't remember at the time with it, but they have a thing that hits every unit that they have for 2 damage for both of them. So you've hit their entire army for 4 damage, you know, knocked them down to about half life, and you got 2 turns. And so like anything they can counterattack with you is already massively weakened. It can't, you know, really compete. And it's pretty much, there's a ton of things like that. Like there's one of them with a Sammy, and I love Advance Wars if you don't know. There's one thing with Sammy and Eagle where essentially if you have an infantry within 30 spaces of their headquarters, you won. Because essentially you can put it into a transport copter, do a double move with a transport copter, get it out, and then get the extra movement on Sammy's turn. And just, you know, you capture it instantly with their ability. And so, like, there's a bunch of those things where it's just like, okay, as soon as you get this, you've pretty much won. And it changes up the dynamic a lot with it. And that's right. What I thought of Civ Rev for the 20 minutes I played it.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
Anyway.
All right. Go ahead.
So, yeah, let's play Civilization V. I like it. It's Civilization. I haven't had too much time to go into detail to see like all the intricacies of it.
What else do you think about buying on Steam, speaking of Steam?
I don't know. I got a lot of stuff on the GOG sale.
Right.
And then I got some stuff on the PlayStation Network before with it. And the only thing you were mentioning Amnesia, and that was a game I was thinking of getting, so I might pick that up. But like, I've got Antechamber, haven't started it yet. Probably going to do that this weekend.
You know.
Yeah, it's like Antechamber, same thing. I got Papa and Yo. I'm going to start that this weekend, or sometime soon, probably soon. And there's a lot of those games where I'm just like, I just have got a lot of the ones that I wanted for a while. I just need to start them.
I'm thinking of getting Knights of the Old Republic 2 while it's, if it goes on sale a little more.
There's some of those. What is it at? Like $3?
Well, you know, the thing with the Steam sale is if you just wait till the last day, they pretty much put everything back on sale. So
yeah,
that's what I mostly do.
I see. So you wait till the last day.
Yeah.
Got it. What else, Tim?
That's pretty much it, honestly.
No iPhones action?
Not really. Plague Inc. is still playing that. Still destroying the world.
Plague Inc. is hugely popular.
Yeah, it's fun.
Sometimes when you bring up games on here from the iOS store or Android store, they're like more niche. But like that one is freaking balls to the wall popular. I was looking at the top and it's like 7th or something ridiculous. I mean, people love the shit out of Plague Inc. It's a really fun game.
Like I did all the zombie ones. They were kind of tough to do, actually, like getting it on Brutal.
Yeah.
But I've beaten every single mission on Brutal. I have yet to 5-star something, and that's what I've been trying to do lately. I keep getting the 4-star one with it, but it's tough. I'm not sure exactly how I could do better with it, like in terms of my approach.
I downloaded it. I just haven't really started yet.
Yeah, so. It's one of those things you kind of play for a little bit, and you're like, wow, it's been 4 hours.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, anyway, on to me then. I have been playing, as anyone who looks at my Xbox Live account knows, a shitload of Dead Island.
And Riptide.
And Riptide, but Dead Island is, I mean, you know, all right. And then let me just say, and I'm already going to point out, you know, I'm going to have a huge dissenting opinion with Jordan, because we were just arguing before the podcast about the game, his merits versus lack thereof. You know, let me just say, going into these games, I'm not a huge zombie fan. Tim loves zombies. The whole world loves zombies, and to some extent, not as much as Tim does, but they do. I don't mean to speak for you, Tim, but you do love zombies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the whole world is like, I mean, The Walking Dead is so huge. I found out yesterday that I listened to Charlie Rose that it's huge internationally too, which I had no idea. I mean, that show is freaking ballistically popular. So anyway, I am not a big zombie fan, so that didn't draw me into that game. And I'm not a huge, huge fan of open world games. I like them. I'll play like 2 a year usually. But I find them really stressful for a reason Tim had pointed out to me actually when we were talking about it, which is that there's so many side quests, and it's like they're not that much fun because they're fetch quests typically. But you feel bad if you don't do them, like you're missing something, like you want a weapon mod, or you need the money, or maybe you'll be underpowered if you don't, or it just doesn't
feel complete if you don't do it, you know?
Yeah, it's like something, they're hanging there in your list, and it's like, I don't know, it doesn't feel optional, at least not to me. It could be an OCD issue. But anyway, so I tend to shy away from them. But I had a friend over, and we wanted to play some co-op. Turns out it's not split-screen co-op, even though it says it is on the back of the box. But I picked it up and put it in anyway. And I'd had about 2 false starts with this game, when it came out, the first game, when it came out, and then a little after that. And then this time I was like, fuck it, I'm going to play a couple hours and find out what this is all about. Because let me just tell you about that game. Would you guys at least concede it is a very divided opinion on that game? There's some people. It's a platinum seller. It's very popular. A lot of people love it, and a lot of people hate it.
I thought it was kind of a generally understood to be mediocre.
Right.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is it's understood to be mediocre, but a lot of people play the hell out of it.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, nobody says it's a great game. I haven't met many people say it's a great game, and I'm not going to say it's a great game. But I'm really having fun. I finally see what the buzz is about, what the obsession with some people is about. And it's just that the zombie slashing action coupled with the leveling up system is just really fun for me. I know, Tim, you were saying that it didn't feel significant, the leveling up.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you play for 3 hours, you get a level, and then it's like, wow, now I do 2% more damage with a blunt weapon.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with a lot of like open world RPGs like that. It's like I spend a long ass time doing something, and then it just doesn't feel significant to me.
But there are other things too to offset that. I hear you. But there are things like weapon modding. You always get a new mod every hour, and then you have to find the ingredients and make that weapon, which is cool. You're always opening chests with new potential rare weapons, which are cool. And I also found out that doing quests is by far the best way to level. So you're gonna kill zombies anyway. That's fine. But especially early game, quest out, because that's how you level up.
Yeah.
And you can level up pretty quickly in the quest. And then late game, the zombies start giving you a lot more experience, and zombies actually become a good source of experience. But it takes a while. At first, it's like 10 XP, a zombie and shit. But anyway, I just really enjoy those games. And get this, this is going to be the biggest shocker. I'm absorbed in the story.
Really?
What? Yeah. So by about the jungle, it gets to the point. I mean, okay, it's garbage, but... You know what I mean? It's very, very shaky and service level. But you know what I didn't realize before about Dead Island? It's made by Techland, the Call of Juarez people. I always heard Deep Silver, because they're the publisher, you know? But Techland made the fucker, just like Call of Juarez Bound in Blood, which is a brilliant game. The Cartel was shit, and I happen to know that was a very rushed game. But Bound in Blood was really fucking great, with a really good story about two brothers. One's religious, one's an outlaw. It was a really good story. So anyway, this has like... moments that are horrendous that you guys have seen early game that are just like, oh my god, look at the guy with the tattoo on his face saying ridiculous shit in a Bobo accent, you know, Cinnamon, like, right?
We need orange juice or we're all gonna die.
Right. Hey, literally,
oh, now we need some thinness or we're all gonna die.
Literally, I think you're doing a better job.
Yeah.
If you were the voice actor, it might have been more convincing. But later on in the game, like, there's this hacker character named Karen, and all this intrigue involving him and who the voice is on the microphone, or maybe who it isn't. and all this cool intrigue. The four main characters get fleshed out more and are actually interesting. So it's like 50-50 on the story and the characters. Like 50% of it sucks and 50% of it's really compelling to me. In the same way Resident Evil 6 is compelling. You know what I mean? It's not good, but I want to know what's going to happen because it's kind of fun. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm telling you, it's going to be in your top three, if not. Like Dead Island Riptide is so going to be in your top three
I don't
games
know.
Of the year.
It's possible, but let me say this. It is underrated as far as this. You know, I mean, even IGN gives those games like 8s and 7.5s and stuff, really. And Riptide got like a 7.2 or 7.5, and they're like...
It's averaging like 6.7 on a game ranking.
Yeah, which isn't that low. Bad, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, the thing about it is that everybody's like, it's the same game, basically. It's like an expansion pack, glorified expansion. But it actually has a lot more than I was, like, because I went in with those expectations, it actually has a lot that I wasn't expecting. Graphics are a little tweaked, but they're still pretty bad. And all the pop-in and all the glitches and all that, it's still there. But they did a lot of upgrades that are cool. They added a new character. They have a new weapon upgrade system where when you use a weapon, kind of like in Skyrim, where you use a weapon and it levels itself based on your use, so you can basically level in any way you want. So now, you see, in the first game, you know, if you picked Sam B, like I did, you know, Hoodoo You Voodoo guy, And you're obviously a blade, a blunt weapons expert. You want to just focus on blunt weapons, but that cuts off, you know, 2/3 of the weapon choices for you. I just used everything in that game anyway. But in this one, whatever you use levels up too. So you can actually more significant weapon bonuses come from the weapon skill. So really anybody can use any weapon. Which is interesting. I mean, you know,
I
don't know.
What's the new guy's special stuff?
It's actually kind of disappointing. Go figure, right? His name's John Morgan. He's a hand-to-hand specialist, which Sam B kind of was. Sam B was blunt, but a lot of people say he's best with... I've been doing a lot of reading on it. A lot of people say he's best with brass knuckles because they have the fastest DPS, hit. And
you're talking about Sam?
Yeah, Sam B.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so John Morgan actually specializes in using hand-to-hand, which is a new category now they call it. But the problem is... He's a character built around hand-to-hand, and all of his skills are built around it, but there's only three weapon types instead of, like, 10 that can use it. There's brass knuckles. Now they have a new thing, feral claws, and your bare fists, and that's it. So really, there's two weapon types you can use that he specializes in, whereas if you pick Jean, who's the Asian blade master, there's, like, 15 different types of weapons, you know? So it's completely unbalanced. So he's really nerfed in that regard. But he's got some cool hand-to-hand abilities and uppercuts. He does his cool charge move. I mean, it's a really mixed bag, but man, am I having fun playing it. So, anyway.
I never said it's a bad... Well, it is a bad game, but, I mean, it's just... You have Borderlands 2 right there.
I'm going to play that.
And it's better on every level.
I'm going to play that.
Story, character, you know, diversification, enemies. It's right there.
I know. Well, I just got pulled into this, and I want to see, you know.
Huh? It's one of those things where, like, playing those games, they're, like, addictive to me. Because it's a thing where it's, like, I feel compelled to play, but it's not fun. Like, I probably put 25, 30 hours in Dead Island.
Yeah.
But when I was done with it, I was just kind of like, I'm just going to stop playing. And then when I was looking, oh, yeah, that, and I was trying to think back, like, on fun stuff, and I'm like, oh, there was a lot of doing nothing. That I felt compelled to do.
Yeah, when you're complaining about the side quests, I'm going, you know, Borderlands 2 has that problem, that thing where you're compelled, but the side quest stories are fun to go through. The enemies are fun to fight. And
in 2, yes.
Yes,
in 1,
two,
they were rarely both.
One, I don't, yeah, I, 1 is of a game. But 2's great, and, you know, I still own Dead Island, and my group of players, every once in a while, one of them, Adam, friend of the show, he really wants to finish it. I'm not going to say he likes it, but he's like, we still have it. We all bought it, and we're just like, let's watch more Power Rangers. It's about our reaction to Dead Island.
Hey, man, but, you know, on that note, talk about something that a lot of people think is ridiculous and shitty, but you love, you know?
They're wrong. Dead Island.
they're talking about
Power Rangers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
I think Power Rangers got a pretty big following, actually.
Yeah, so does Dead Island.
Anyway. No, look, I'm eventually going to play more Dead Island. It's just... It has so many problems.
Oh, no, I know. I know.
I probably never will.
I'm not going to defend it. It's
Oh, if I didn't have other people who kept going, let's play it, I'm just going to fight it as long as I can.
Like, if I was at a situation to where there were two copies and I was at someone's house and there were, like, two TVs and we could play it then, I'd probably do it.
Yeah, that would
but
be
that's
cool.
about the only time I ever
yeah,
would.
Like a LAN setup. Yeah. That which is why I so wish Xbox One was going to be backwards compatible and at least do it with software so that you could set up a LAN using both your Xboxes. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be pretty cool, actually. That's awesome. Yeah.
They should have done that, man. That would have been so killer. I mean, because I'm never going to buy two Xboxes. I'm just not, you know? So anyway, so I played a lot of Dead Island. I played a little more Last of Us, but I'm still in the university section. I'm going to get by the next podcast. I will absolutely be done. We'll all will be. And we'll talk about it. That'll be awesome. I also played a lot of little iPhone dinky games. Joe Danger Touch, which I've been a huge fan of for a while, just got a patch to add in daily levels. So there's 18 new levels or no, 21 new levels. And they're daily. Like you can play them on a certain day and then you beat a certain group of seven, and then you move to the next week worth of levels. It's really fun, though. Really Twitch fun gameplay. I really can't recommend Joe Danger Touch more. And for like a dollar or two, it even has more content than ever before. So I would really recommend that. And on that note, you forgot a game you played, Jordan. The Walking Dead 400 Days.
Oh, yeah. It's been so... We haven't recorded in a while.
A couple weeks. Go ahead.
Well, 3 weeks, and it came out, I think, like the day after we recorded, so that's why
oh,
it didn't
yeah, that's
come
true.
Right to mind.
That's true.
Yeah, it's not the first season. It's a lead into season two, so I'd wait to play it till then.
Yeah, which you're going to do again, right?
Yeah, I'm going to play it again. It is good, and the short stories are interesting, and, you know, these are clearly characters that are going to play a big role in season two, and I like the idea of getting to know the cast beforehand.
It gives them a lot more freedom in what they can do.
Yeah. That said, yeah, just wait. I mean, you know, it's not like you're not going to be able to find it if you wait. And you're going to have to just play it again to get to know the characters over. So just wait till season two is about to come out and then play it.
Another thing I was surprised about, Jordan, too, is that, you know, I just picked up Shin Megami 4. And I'm, like, less of a Mega 10 fan than you are. In fact, a couple podcasts ago, you were like, they're my favorite RPG company right
they
now
are.
And all that. But you seem to have no excitement about this game. What's up? I want to get excited about it with you, man.
Well, I just played Devil Summoner.
I know, that's like but that's not new.
The same type of game, at the very least. Or Soul Hackers.
Yeah.
Soul Hackers. Devil Summoner's
I mean, are you
series.
Even excited about 4? I mean, this is a new mainline Mega 10.
It is.
We're really excited about this.
I mean, it's... I don't know. I'll get to it eventually. I just don't have it in me to play another entire dungeon crawl game again.
Yeah. I hear you.
You know, I'm... The main series has never been my favorite. I wasn't the biggest. Like, if I were to rank all of the ones I've played, I don't know that Shin Megami Tensei 3 would rank that high anyway.
What were the other ones? There's Persona, and then...
Well, there's Persona 4, Devil Survivor, Devil Survivor 2, Devil Summoner, Digital Devil Saga.
Well, that's Shin Megami mainline, right?
No.
Oh.
I mean, the mainline is hard to say. I mean...
No, I thought the mainline was Digital Devil Saga...
No, it's like Mega 10, then SMT, SMT 2, SMT 3.
Which was what, Nocturne?
Strange Journey, and then this one are technically the main line. But again, that series is nothing but
I thought Digital Devil Saga 1 and 2 were part of the main series.
No, they're their own thing.
But they're very similar, right?
They have their own unique combat system, I mean.
Oh, really? Man, I really thought they were. Okay. So most of the Shin Megami mainline games are old.
At this point, yeah. I mean,
except for Nocturne, they're like...
And Strange Journey, but...
Strange Journey is not... I mean, it was originally... I heard it was started as a mainline, and then they decided it's not anymore a mainline.
They list it as such, so... I mean,
all right.
They can call it what they want. It doesn't matter. They're all just...
No, I want to understand... I want to understand story and mechanic-wise what they're trying to put out to me. You know what I mean?
Well, the story doesn't matter. It's its own thing. I mean, none of them are really connected.
Story theme, story tone... type of story.
Well, the themes go across the whole series too. Right. So I mean, it's a mess. It's hard to, you know, put them across lines. I mean, the only one that you can be entirely certain of is Persona, because Persona was released not technically as part of Shin Megami Tensei in Japan, but it features all the same demons and, you know, it's about different themes thematically. But like Digital Devil Saga, Devil Survivor, well, Devil Survivor leans more towards the Persona type of thematicness. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mess. You just got to love it for what it is.
Yeah, but you're going to play SMT4 at some point?
At some point. I'm just not in the mood for it right
now.
It's the same reason I didn't buy Project Cross Zone. I really want to play it, but I'm just not in the mood for that kind of investment. It's supposed to be like an 80-hour game, and I'm going, I mean, I have time for it, but I don't know that I have the focus for that.
Yeah, because you'll play 4 LEGO games in that period, but
yeah.
No, I hear you. It's all about what you feel like. Mood is a big part of gaming. It really is. I know you would second that, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I get, like, I just get moods for genres, you know? Like,
like the Dynasty Warriors genre.
I have news
like
for both Warriors. Of you. Do I'm going to lead with that now when we go to news.
Go ahead.
I got nothing else
to say, honestly.
Okay.
I get news for genres or just like, I just want to play this genre for a while and then not touch it for a couple, you know, months or years, whatever.
So are we moving to news?
News.
Okay. News.
Well, one of the first things that was interesting is Dynasty Warriors 8. Reception has been pretty good.
Has
really?
It's been getting really. It's been.
I saw a dude in the store buying it. And he was so pumped. What are the reviews?
Well, it's basically being positioned as the game that addresses all the criticisms from some critics. Some people are still like, "Oh, it's just Dynasty Warriors again," but some are like, "No, this addresses a lot of the issues that people have had."
What does it address?
The repetitiveness. They've apparently got this new sort of rock paper scissors type of combat mechanic.
Yeah,
which does what?
But if I remember correctly, I haven't played the game yet and I was reading it, but it's like certain generals will be better against certain other ones based upon like a rock, paper, scissor mechanic. And so it's like, you know, certain people will be better against you. So you want to stay away from other ones. And so you want to sort of target other ones and then target other ones. And then it almost makes it so like the other generals who normally just stand around and do nothing will be able to take them out a little easier and it lets you add a little more strategic play.
Yeah. Okay, what else did they address?
Well, another thing is, going off of that, you know, the characters have their main weapon, but then they can equip a sub-weapon that might be able to counterbalance that weakness. And, you know, there's a bit more of a parrying and, you know, timing of your attack system in the game than just wail on the X button or whatever it might have been before. So it's trying to flesh it out more. And it seems really interesting in that. I like Dynasty Warriors. I'm not the super big fan of it, but it seems like the kind of game I'd be interested in picking up now a little more.
That is definitely a good game for a time sink.
Yeah. So I might do that.
Are you picking it up, Tim?
I'll probably eventually pick it up.
Oh, okay.
Again, he's got to get in the mood.
Oh, I forgot. My bad.
Yeah.
But wait, what are the reviews?
I forget exactly. It's gotten...
I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah.
Metacritic, hit me up.
Game rankings, motherfucker.
All right, my bad.
Well, the Metacritic's 71%.
Okay.
And it doesn't have any red ratings on Metacritic, which is...
But does it have lots of greenies?
It's about split. It's like 3 greens and 6 yellows so far.
Okay.
71 is good for 72. 67.
Yeah.
That's good for a Dynasty Warriors game.
Yeah, people usually rip them a new one. Yeah.
I mean, you know, just talking about game reviews isn't usually a big thing, but it's a big series for at least Tim. And I like it already.
No, I mean it's become an institution more than a series. Even it's like its own genre. It's become.
It really is. Like that's why I think part of the hate of it is like they try to compare it to other games, and it's just like it's gonna fail if you're comparing it for those things.
It's
like,
not what it is.
It is not gonna be as intense as, you know, a Devil May Cry or a Bayonetta or something like that, or even as flashy. It's like, I don't know. It's almost RPG-esque in a way, and like,
and
you know, killing
almost,
the basic enemies is more like killing, you know, random encounters.
Yeah, and another thing about it too is that it's very strategy based. Actually, like you don't need strategy to beat it, but the overall setup. Like, let's say you put the difficulty on super hard, you'd then need to employ like the same kind of strategies you'd need in like an RTS. Like, send these troops here, attack these little guys first, power up till you can, you know, attack bigger guys and stuff. Like,
you
around
can't
the
do
map.
That.
Don't you have to like go and like isn't it like a big like grid of like. You go this way and fight these people, then you move that way. It's like you're beating little battles and leaders and then move to the next one.
I mean, kind of, but you have no control over your troops, really. Other than just like the fact of most of your troops are never going to do anything. They're going to stand there with their weapons and look at the enemies who stand there with their weapons. And then you come in there and kill like 70 people.
Yeah.
And then the people standing with their weapons step forward about 10 feet and then stand forward their weapons at the next people.
But you have a choice of which battles you attack when.
Yeah, so
in
you
what
can
order.
Do that theoretically, but it doesn't really have that big of an effect on things most of the time.
All right. It just looks, then it's a pseudo RTS look because it looks like it over the view.
But that, I mean, that's why I think it's almost more like, you know, the normal enemies you fight are random encounters and the generals you fight are mini bosses. And then the ending boss is an actual boss. And think of it like an RPG in that aspect with
it. Yeah, yeah.
And that's almost where it goes because it's more about, you know, killing lots of stuff and getting experience and making your guy stronger. And, you know, and being like, if you're familiar with the stories, you're like, oh, man, this guy's cool. He's awesome. But if you're not, it's just like, man, this is kind of stupid anime with 100 characters who all pretty much play the same.
Got it.
Which is not, you know, wrong most of the time with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Move along.
So there's that. This one was for me. Even more Borderlands 2 DLC is on the way.
Is it called Even More Borderlands 2 DLC?
It should be.
That's what I wrote. no. Well, they announced it a couple weeks ago because people were like, okay, the season pass is over. And Randy Pitchford came out and he's like, no, look, just because the season pass is done, that's like, okay, pay up front and you get a free DLC. But we still have more. And in fact, by the time this comes out, there will be whatever it is, because they're announcing it tomorrow relative to us.
They're doing that with Injustice as well. They have new characters that are still going to be released.
Are you still playing that? Do you like that stuff?
I was thinking of starting it back up again. Like they announced Martian Manhunter.
Because it's really getting a lot of, it's got a lot of longevity.
Yeah, it's got a lot of positive vibe with it, and like they seem to be supporting it. So I was thinking about picking it back up. I don't know.
New characters.
I kind of want to as well, just because fighting game.
I mean, it's a solid fighting game. I don't know.
Yeah. I've heard really good things, and I also actually heard that the iPad game is pretty fun.
I actually heard that too.
My cousin plays it.
Yeah. I know nothing about it though, but I heard like there was a lot of stuff that you can get from the actual game, and most of the time, you know, no one does those things.
It's like
but a lot of people have, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's cool though. All right,
but yeah, I'm excited for more Borderlands 2 DLC. I thought the Tiny Tina was a fitting end, but
well, it probably will just be a side story or something.
Who knows? I'm up for more DLC though, because I still play it. Ultimate Vault Hunter playthrough right now.
Yeah,
getting to 61. Strider HD was announced.
What? I love Strider, kind of.
Strider's a fun game.
It's all right. Yeah.
It's a classic. He shows up in fighting games.
That's true.
I don't know, it exists. They're doing a lot of HD remakes.
He's got sword and he runs kind of funny, like in a diagonal motion.
It's cyclical gaming is now. It's like movies. Nothing but remakes.
You know what I saw that I didn't know even came out? Muramasa Rebirth for Vita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to play that. That sounds cool. I always wanted to play Muramasa all the way through. It was a Wii game, right?
Yes.
And I got it. I never really played it through. I played like a couple hours of it, and there's so much more to it I never got to.
Probably fun. It's got good ratings.
But but Dragon Crown's coming out, and I think I'll just play that.
I'll probably play that too when it comes out.
Yeah.
Laugh at the character art.
That character art.
Oh,
much
it's
trouble
all right
for them. But it's I'm sure right the game will
wait,
be
wait, what's
fun
funny about it? I didn't hear this. No,
there's just all these character arts where they show pictures of all the girls, and it's like huge tits, huge ass, and the head is like half the size of a boob.
Oh, man.
It's yeah, like, it's
like it's done that very, very artistically, like watercolor colors everywhere, and it's just like, you know, this is kind of really beautiful, but man, she doesn't have a head.
Yeah.
She does not.
Yeah.
So there we go. Okay, that was Strider. Not any real excitement for that.
Not really,
expecting it, but I'll play it probably.
Yeah, me too. I like games like that. Wait, is it the same game just redone, or is it like a new game like Bionic Commando was?
It's hard to even tell anymore. They just announce them and then they release details later.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know.
All right.
More X-Bone flip-flopping has occurred.
X-Bone.
There was a whole petition for
I thought that
reinstating
was so cool. Reinstating
stuff.
What I heard was they call it something like petition to get back what we were promised at E3.
Yeah, I signed it. Well, basically what they've said is they are now exploring the possibility of reactivating those features post-launch in some new format.
Mm-hmm. So wishy-washy.
I think the situation here is like, actually, does anyone watch, I forgot the name of it. It's the news show on Penny Arcade.
Oh,
Checkpoint.
Yeah.
Checkpoint. I thought Checkpoint did the best synopsis of the Xbox One, and they did it very, very
articulately.
And what it was is they said, okay, it wasn't that the Xbox One, they may have been, you know, trying to screw people. They may have been trying to do stuff. They may have been trying to do all these things. We're not going to say what they were trying to do. What we will say is that the gaming audience wasn't ready for it. No matter what it was, they weren't ready for it, and they didn't want it. And that's why the Xbox had to switch. And I can accept that, because I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
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 But I think a lot of those features, like, I thought the Xbox One feature sounded pretty cool with
no,
it. And it's just
I love the idea of not having to have a disc in the system.
Yeah, and what I think they're going to try to do is, you know, keep the disc one with it. And I think this is what they were originally trying to do, but they think they pushed it a little too hard. It's just like, you know, they're going to be able to have the disc, but they're just going to play up the downloadable stuff so much that just people won't want the disc anymore with it.
That's smart. So they work people towards it more slowly to counteract the shell shock they had.
Yeah, and so I think people just went too quick for it. And I think that was the thing for it. It's like, I didn't care at all because, you know, I play PC games. And that's the status
and
of most of them right
it
now. Yeah.
You get it. You understand what they're just saying.
That didn't bother me with it. But I think a lot of people, it's just like, I don't know what's going on with this. So they became
the
conspiracy theorists.
That they're just trying to offer something new and they're going about it. Like, yes, it seems. Yes, they're being wishy-washy and they're going back and forth, but they're just trying to. They came up with an idea and they really want to implement it in some way. There is an audience for it, clearly. And I like that they're working on it.
Yeah.
Who knows what it'll end up being form wise. We'll see in like a year or two from now, but
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, at launch they had the thing, but it was a thing they took away later to save money with a cheaper one or something like that. You know, make a completely downloadable one, you know, a year down the road, like they removed the PlayStation 2 backwards compatibility or something like that to sort of get people adjusted to the downloadable one so that they don't maybe they'll change the DRM some stuff too with it. because that got people really upset.
I mean, I'm not exactly sure why. Cool ideas.
Somebody thinks I have a very similar policy.
I know. I just don't see console gamers going for that, a discless console. At least not not in like a year or two. Maybe a 5 to 10 years from now. But
really?
It's just, it's a big thing for console gamers. They like being able to sell their stuff. And
see, I think they're just going to get replaced, though. I mean, like, I look at the next generation, and everyone I know who's like 16 right now doesn't give a shit. They want their stuff downloadable quick. If they have to wait 30 seconds, it's too long.
I'll tell you what, things have changed for me a little bit. I used to be of the type where I wanted stuff to be like, I wanted to play all of my older games on my Xbox. Like when I first got an Xbox 360, I wanted to be able to play my Xbox One, what my original Xbox games on it. I was big on that. Nowadays, I see all those games on there, and I don't know. I want new stuff. I'm really not.
That
I want to play new stuff more than I used to. I used to be more into retro games, but now it's like. Go ahead.
I think there's a thing in the gaming community where I really think gamers are not really true to themselves and to what they actually do. Because I think people make such a big deal out of backwards compatibility most of the time with it, and then no one uses it. It's like when the PlayStation 3 removed it and everyone got upset and they were just like, no one's using it.
I did for a while, but so, again, I hear
like you use it at launch because you got a bunch of PlayStation 2 games.
Yeah.
But then within
over
6 months,
time, it's obsolete.
It's like, I've got games to replace it. Oh, and then a new game came out and a new game came out. And it's like, I just don't even bother.
Now, those are my older games to play,
just,
right?
I just still have my PS2.
Yeah,
it's
like,
I don't see.
Some people still do that
deal.
If they want to do it, but it's
I'll
just like.
I'll tell you why it's a big deal. I have a friend whose Xbox is broken. And Xbox One is coming out, and he's like, should I get my Xbox fixed? Is Xbox One going to play my games? I can just wait. No, you can't, you know, and things like that.
I don't know. Well,
it's a small audience, though.
There's other people that, yeah, I hear you. Some people that you know, are thinking about buying an Xbox now, and I guess that's another reason Xbox likes doing it.
If you don't have an Xbox yet, then, yeah, get a 360. You got a whole, like, mess of games to play if you haven't
had a
system up till now.
I just think it's weird, though, because I think, you know, I think a lot of times gamers want the choice to do something even though they know they're never going to actually do it.
And for me, honestly, Tim, I hear you on it, but we're the exception.
I don't know. I don't know anybody who does these sort of things with these.
I loved backwards compatibility when I first got my Xbox and my PS3.
Yeah, well, like I was saying,
for a year or so, I was like playing all those games. I would go back and I would get like for example, Killzone 2 would come out. I'd play Killzone 2 and then I'd be like, man, I want to try the original Killzone. I'd buy that and put it in. And it would happen with all kinds of games like that, Tim. And I wanted to play them, and they're only for PS2. And I'd be like, all right, awesome, I can play them. Then my PlayStation 3 with the PS2 backwards compatibility broke. I sent it in, and they said, well, we can fix it for $150, or we can give you a brand new Slim with no compatibility for $100. And I was like, well, the huge hard drive, I can't say no.
Yeah.
But I always missed that a little bit.
I don't know. I mean, it's just like to me, it's like I remember
it's
getting,
not necessary,
going
though.
From the Nintendo to the Super Nintendo, and it didn't bother me that the Super Nintendo didn't play the Nintendo games, you know?
I guess that's a
point.
It
didn't bother me that the PlayStation didn't play the PlayStation 2 did. It didn't bother me the N64 didn't do those sort of things with it. It just didn't bother me before.
Well, they set a precedent, though, with these disc-based systems were able to play backwards compatibility, and then they took it out, and so people feel jacked. That's all.
I know they do, but it's just like, I just don't get it. Because for me, it's like, if someone takes away something I never use, I don't care. Well, it's people, like, I never use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, another thing is people want to trade in their Xbox, too. A lot of them. The trading is bigger than I thought. This really shows it. A lot of people were up in arms about the no-use games. A lot of people.
I don't get
it. I know,
that,
but they were, man. I heard
well,
it from, like I even, heard it for, if I heard it from
best,
one person,
you know,
I heard
GameStop's
it from a
going to give you like $10 on a new game.
I mean, if you buy a $60 game and sell it within like a month
you
or two, you'll get $22.
And then, and then they usually have a deal going on where if you trade in three, you get 20% or more or something. Or if you trade it towards a pre-order, you get even more. So there's all these, and you work it really tight, Jordan, where you always have, you can trade about two or three games for your next new game usually.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I understand, you know, if you're younger, particularly, and this is probably why my Facebook was so vocal. I know a lot of college kids and they like, you know, they don't buy a lot of games, and when they do, they like that ability to trade it and, you know, get another game for what is essentially $20 or $30 instead of the full $60 every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can't argue with that. That's what I did for the past 4 years. I mean, now I'm moving into a hopefully point in my life where I'm like, okay, I can just buy the games. I don't need to worry about it as much. But that matters to some people.
Maybe I just don't trade in as often, because my memories of trading in with GameStop most of the time is I tried to give them 10 games one time and they were going to give me $70. And I was just like, no, I'm not even going to give you these. I'm only getting $70 for 10 games. It's a fucking ripoff.
Yeah. And that's on that day, Tim's backwards collection was born.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't want to trade these in. And when I trade them in, it's like, I don't even get that.
I'll tell you what,
yeah.
I do kind of love, I've started making a collection again now that I have a good job, but I'm the same way. I used to trade everything the way that Jordan does, where it's like, you want new games. You know what I mean? And once you've played a game, like for Tomb Raider, for example, I got every collectible. I beat that game, 20 hours, whatever. I'm not going to play that again. Yeah. And if I am, it's going to be for $10 5 years from now, you know? So I can see where you're coming from completely, Jordan, with making sure you trade to get the newest, greatest stuff. At the same time, now that I have a little more money, I really like having a little bit of a collection so I can, you know, bounce around a bit more. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. When I go over to your house, Tim, I'm always in awe of your PS1, 2, and 3 games just stacked there. I'm just like, oh, man, look at all those fat games. And more than that, it's like a trip down memory lane just looking at it. That's why, like, I remember that controversial comment the Heavy Rain guy made. He was just like, you know, everyone was talking about multiple playthroughs on that game, and it's really not good for it, that game. It's like a one-time thing. But there are a lot of different choices you can make in that game, or at least ostensibly there were supposed to be. So he would say, you know, David Cage, he would say, I actually hope people don't play it more than once. And like Sony and everybody was like, what? You know what I mean? Because that's like basically begging people to trade it in. And then the way he combated that was like he got on the internet and he was like, well, I hope like a great book, you put it on your shelf and you look at it and you think about the individual unique experience you had with Heavy Rain.
I'm totally down for that.
I'm just telling you what he
that's
said.
That's what I do with most of my games, honestly. It's just like, I just like to keep them down for memories and stuff. When it's just, and when I do try to trade them in, I'm like, whoa.
$3.
No, I'm not
going
to give you these things for that much. That's not a good
deal. It's weird. Games just, it's just how they've evolved. Like, I have a huge collection of comics. I'm probably, half of them I'm never going to read again, but they're there. I'm probably not going to sell them because I just don't sell my graphic novels. For whatever reason.
Well, pretty soon, with this new systems, if they do go digital like Tim is predicting and they're able to pull off that switch, then we're going to be talking about it like the way that you rock it. You know, you buy games to play them once or to play them through, and then they're there while you have that system, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I don't even think that'll be the case with it. I imagine, like, if they go to full digital, the biggest thing, assuming there's another console generation after this one, would be able to keep it connected. I mean, it'd be like upgrading a computer. You can still get all your old games. I imagine that would be the key thing with it, because that's
so much
easier to do.
Isn't that interesting that in that case, you think about it? You think it's a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, it's much easier to use cloud computing to store something than it is in a physical management.
No, but it's funny that it's important. Now, it's in that case, you're starting to say that it's important. That's kind of a double standard, because before you were saying that, you know, really people don't use backwards compatibility. Now you're saying it would be integral, like looking forward to the next gen.
Well, I think it'll be a marketing point. I don't think people are going to use it.
Okay.
That's my point with backwards compatibility. It is a big marketing point. But no one really uses it after a little bit.
I see. So it's important that people know those games are still usable.
Yeah, it's like a security blanket. It's like, if I want to kill Steelblade, I do, but I'm just never actually going to do that.
Right, but knowing it's there, I know exactly what you mean. But then, it's comforting. It really is.
Yeah, and it's just a situation where it's just, you take that away, and people get upset with it, even though, you know, it's like, you weren't doing anything with it anyway.
I have a problem with buying movies. That's an example. Like, if I buy a movie, but you know me, I'm like that. But I'll buy a movie, and I'll know I can watch it anytime. And then it's like, wow, I'll never watch it.
Yeah, same thing with me. I got a collection of about 200 movies. I watch maybe 20 of them.
I know, and then you end up watching new stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. That you might have rented or whatever. Anyway, moving on to news. We don't have unlimited time today. Go ahead. My fault. I talked too much.
I know. I'm just these are small stories. Arkham Origins announced another villain, Copperhead.
What? Who's Copperhead?
That's she's a villain with like poisonous claws.
Oh,
and
they made her up?
No, she's from the DC.
Oh,
you. They're running. They blew their load on Arkham City, villain wise, and now they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Is Copperhead really?
I've never even heard of her.
All right,
I thought they'd do like Great White Shark or something like that.
They've still. It's what, the 9 deadly assassins that are coming to kill him, or is it 7?
It sounds awesome, dude. What is this fucking Brian Lee O'Malley book? Fucking Scott Pilgrim up in this piece.
And there's also going to be a character that sends him on another drug trip, like Scarecrow or Mad Hatter.
Awesome. Awesome.
We'll see.
It sounds cool.
It's another game.
I can't wait. Is that this Christmas?
It's this like October.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
I don't know.
It's
going to
be
fun.
It'll be fun. It's another game for Troy Baker, who is the Nolan North of this year as far as voice
Apparently,
acting
yeah.
video games.
That's so awesome. He's talented.
He's voicing
that
the Joker.
Motherfucker is talented.
Really?
Yeah.
I do think he is very talented. It's like, it's hard to tell the same stuff like
that. I know. He's very differentiating. I think he really differentiates well between characters.
And the last thing, because this is from way back in our early days, but the trailer for Indie Game the Movie Special Edition came out. And ramping up to release it.
It's finally going to come out.
Yeah, it's finally coming out.
You know how much work it must be? Think about it, like the work that they told us in our interview, how much work it was to put just the hour and a half together. Imagine editing the 9 hours of content they're advertising.
Well, there's all the extra content. It's like over 300 plus minutes of short films.
Oh.
And then they filmed new epilogues for like Phil Fish and Team Meat, maybe.
Oh my God. The amount of work. You know, I understand they're building their names, but the amount of work for the limited financial gain they're probably going to get from that is mind boggling to me.
I mean, there's a box set edition that I think has more content, and then you can get a good chunk of the content on Steam for $15. But I think.
Yeah, you can get just the original one for like $3. It's part of the Steam sale.
Yeah. And then if you have that, you can upgrade it to special edition for $5. But if you get the box set, it has a bunch more content.
Are you sure?
That's what they said.
That sounds like $8 total.
No, I mean, there's less content on the Steam version.
No, but if you said it's $15 to buy
the Steam version of the special edition. Well, because I got an email from it, and the special edition was like $40. And I'm just like, hell yeah, I do Steam. It's $8. That's a huge difference.
Well, yeah, there's more content on the DVD Blu-ray sets than there is on the Steam version. But it looks
interesting.
Aren't
they going to be $100?
No, there's like, I think it's...
I think that the Blu-ray is like 50 and the other one's 40.
It's in Canadian
like
dollars.
I want to support it though, you know?
So, I'm going to support it. Like when I get my next paycheck, I'm going to buy it.
Is it out?
No, I think it's still got a few months.
It's in pre-order.
Yeah, it's in the pre-order phase now.
Okay.
But I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it is something like that. It's in Canadian dollars, so I don't entirely know.
Anyway, those guys are awesome. They were really cool to us, and I love that movie. It's so good.
That's news.
Awesome. So we're going to talk about our favorite co-op experiences. I guess we'll do how many do you have, Jordan? Like a top three list, something like that?
I mean, yeah, that's what we usually do. So I just.
Okay, we'll do top three with maybe two honorable mentions each. Does that sound good? Can you come up with two, guys?
Yeah, honorable mentions. Like six games I had that were on like my short list. So I have honorable mentions.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Well, why don't you start off, Jordan?
Oh,
number three.
Number three was kind of the hard spot because. When I was going for my top two, it was like, the number one was just like a no contest type of thing. And then number two was a pretty solid follow-up. But there were a lot I wanted to talk about, but probably Portal 2 is number three for me because it's such a solid game on its own, but the co-op is, you know, you could release that as a standalone game. It's so solid and well put together. And
how long was it? Like, what kind of length do you have?
I don't know. It's probably about... It's hard to say. I mean, it's been like 2 years.
It's about as long as the main campaign.
It's about as long as that. So probably 10 to 12 hours, maybe. It's hard again. And then you throw in the peer review DLC, and that's another 5 to 6 hours.
So. Now, does the peer review like brutally hard? Because I remember that even the co-op was pretty damn hard.
Yeah, the peer review is a step above the regular co-op.
Because I remember one day you brought me home. We went home from school. I picked you up one day, and you had this crazy diagram of like 5 pages for you and Liz to go through like one level.
Yes, I'd sketched out one of the levels because, well, I mean, I was in class and I was bored. And it's the kind of game it gets caught in your head and you can't stop thinking about it.
And it's fun to think about.
Yes. And so I was sitting there and I sketched out. I was like, oh, I think I've got it. And I did get it. And it's very rewarding. The reason it didn't go higher is simply that it is the kind of game, and this is any puzzle game, so it's not really a fault of Portal 2, is that once you've played it, you've played it.
Yeah.
And you can't really... I mean, that had an online matchmaking thing, and I went, why would I do that? Because either I'm going to play with someone who knows everything already, is just going to be bull rushing it, or someone who has no idea what they're doing, and I know, so it's like, I'd rather just play with the one person I played it with, and then I'm done. And it was very solid, and I think it's probably one of the best co-op it's probably the best co-op puzzle game. I can't really think of a whole.
I can't even think of that many co-op puzzle games.
So, yeah.
Oh, no, wait. What about like things like Ilo Milo and stuff like that? Are they just single player, but there's two characters? Is that how that is?
I think Ilo Milo was co-op, actually. I mean, play it single player.
I'll give you another example that's a good co-op.
It was co-op.
I'll give you another good co-op puzzler.
Pretty sure it was.
Just came out. Battle Block.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. And that does alter slightly between co-op and single player.
Yeah. That's a cool game. That is a really cool game we talk very little about, but man, is that a good game.
It's very solid. So Portal 2, I think, is a great game. It was my game of the year a few years ago. So.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I remember that. Tim, what is your number three, man?
My number three is probably Journey.
Awesome. That is a game I haven't played, but it's so intriguing to me.
Yeah,
is it the best of their games?
Yeah, it's my favorite of their games with it. It's just such a good way to spend 3 hours. It's just like, You know, you could go see a good movie or something like that, and it's got that same sort of feeling where just like, I don't want to touch that experience again. That was so awesome with it. It was just so fulfilling in every aspect of it. And I just love the way they do co-op in those situations, because like, I thought a friend of mine said it really well. It's like when he was playing, he thought it was AI until he realized another person, and then it just blew his mind. He was just like, oh my God, there's another person doing this all with me, and sort of things with it. And it's just so good at getting that experience of just doing something with another person that just is very fulfilling, even if it's the most basic things in the world.
What actual input do you have in that game? I haven't played it. Like, how do you interact with the world? You can move it, forward, back, left, and right.
You're jumping around. You're exploring the world with it. You have this
So you have run, jump.
Well, you don't even necessarily have a run. You just have a jump. You have this song mechanic, I guess the best way to do it, where you like release a music. And like what that'll do is there's certain things that get powered up by the music, and then they can power yours up. You have a scarf, and the longer your scarf is, if you're going to places where it powers up, like it'll get longer and it'll lighten up, and then it'll let you do like a really tall jump.
Oh.
And so when you're playing with other people, they can do the music on your scarf and you can jump back and forth with it and sort of stuff with it. And so it's nice because it's like you're talking with the other person to help each other out.
In like music,
though. Yeah, and like a music thing where it's just like, oh.
That is clever.
And then
isn't it even a good seller? Didn't he even do good commercially?
Yeah, it did really well.
It's amazing.
And that made me really happy about it.
That makes me happy about gaming, that it's a genre, that it's, an art form that allows for things that are that non-traditional to be successful financially.
Yeah.
That makes me super happy.
What I loved about it is one of my favorite moments in Journey.
And that your co-op with a random though, right?
Yeah, it's completely random person.
That's
and they
really
can leave in the middle of the map too. And then
that
kind of goes
pop
with it.
In.
Yeah, and it's just a new person popping in. And it's just, it feels totally organic because it's just like, you know, you're going on their journey, they're going on yours, and you passed as friends, never to see each other again, but that was okay.
Yeah.
And that's the way you actually feel when you're playing it. And that's so cool to be able to do that. One of my favorite moments, though, is I was trying to beat this one level. And this one guy, like, he jumped off the thing. And I'm like, why is this guy jumping off it? And he kept, you know, making this music. And I'm just like, what's this guy talking about? And I follow him. And he knew this secret passage, this secret room that he wanted to show me. And it's just like, oh, my God, this is so cool. Thanks for showing this to me. And that's what just makes it cool. It's just great just doing it with another person.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, I mean, it seems like a really cool game. Have you played it, Jordan?
I still haven't gone back and fixed the mistake I made last year. So.
Oh, right.
Or was that earlier? No, that was last year.
That's right.
Time.
No, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm trying to decide what I want to do as my number three, because, you know, like I think I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, it's tough for me with co-op because like mine is in two very specific schools, and that is, you know, games like, I guess I'll just choose one and say my number three is... between Halo and I guess I'm gonna say Resident Evil 5 would be my number three. Tim and I actually played this a lot in co-op, and it was interesting. It was kind of a mixed experience because like at certain points it was really really fun. It's really fun to, you know, I think what do you think of the co-op mechanics in that game, Tim? How do you think it worked out? Cause that was their first co-op game. Yeah,
I don't think Resident Evil needs co-op. It's suspense, and I felt that the co-op, like, they tried to keep it suspenseful a little bit, and then tried to keep it action, and it didn't feel right either way.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad, but it just kind of felt like a mediocre action game and a mediocre suspense game at the same time.
Right.
I think retrospectively, I'm much fonder of Resident Evil 5 now.
Yeah.
Particularly compared to 6. Won't go into that, but I think 5 did have. Nowadays, you know, the horror co-op game is so commonplace. It's like, well, I guess Resident Evil 5 did it well, at least.
What are the co-op games? Oh, Left 4 Dead and...
Left 4 Dead, Dead Space 3.
Right.
I'm not saying they're well done. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they're more common.
I don't even see Left 4 Dead's horror at all, though. I mean, it's pretty much just straight up
it's
action.
It's just like a zombie slasher,
But, you know, it is a solid game. Like, I look back on it, and I remember people not liking it, and I remember playing it and going... I'm having fun with this, and I think that's what's important. It was fun to play. I mean,
yeah, it's like I didn't hate it. It wasn't blown away, though. I give it like 7.758.
Yeah. See, for me, though, what I really enjoyed about that game was I Resident Evil 4. I just love so much. I find it so fun. And the mechanics are pretty much very, very much like that, except you were playing with a friend, and really, you know, you guys were sort of doing your own thing, but you had to work together at all the junctures, and, you know, just the idea of integrating that great gameplay from Resident Evil 4 into a co-op experience where it's you and another person, I just found to be really fun. But then it was also frustrating at times. That Wesker fight at the end was really frustrating. You remember that?
Yeah.
We were having a real hell of a time coordinating and getting it done. I mean, it's pretty hard, And B, it's just like, I don't know. It can be frustrating. So
does it get Chris Boulder punching action though?
Yeah, it does get Chris Boulder punching action. I just think overall it's a really fun game. And as far as like just fun factor in co-op, I think I really enjoyed playing RE5.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right, number two, Jordan.
All right, this is one that it's a little weird because there were a lot of games I didn't put on this list because I went, well, I can play those without co-op and be fine. But this is one where I went, no, but co-op just enhances it so much I couldn't not put it on the list. So my number two is Minecraft. Minecraft is fun to play alone and you can do stuff, but I think it wears out if you, particularly because the fun of Minecraft is building stuff. If you don't have anyone to show it to, what's the point is usually my thing. And I know some people can just build stuff and then put it online. But I play with some friends and we have our own town that we have built and put a ridiculous amount of time into building. We have our house and we have a town hall and a police station and a bar. I built a glass dome that covers our entire city to protect it from mobs. And that took forever because you have to harvest glass and then cook the glass and you have to harvest coal to cook the glass. And then you have to place it, and that takes an ungodly amount of time when you're not doing creative mode because I play survival, and that is how you roll. And Adam built a lighthouse, and we keep building it.
I think a lot of people would argue that that is, you know, one of the greatest co-op games ever. I don't like it just because I don't like it, but a lot of people, I mean, it's so popular.
I think Minecraft is going to be remembered like decades from now. That's going to be the new Mario.
It's so fucking revolutionary. It's so loved.
It's going to be, you know, Mario or Tetris.
And
seminal.
I mean, what works about it is you can tell your own stories. You can have fun. You can go and do your own thing, but it's for this collective good. Like, I can go into the mines and be harvesting for an hour while Adam is building his lighthouse. But then we meet back together and we hang out and we talk and we're totally still going to play a game of Fiasco in Minecraft at some point.
It's crazy. Like, at the tutoring center I work at, I see a lot of, like, 9-8-year-old kids.
I know.
Every single one of them talks about Minecraft.
I know this
like
little
it's
girl.
It's a religious experience
I know
for them,
this
and
little
they
girl
never
who loves
shut up about
it.
It.
I know. It's
like every
eight.
Day, like, when I'm hearing, like, I'm tutoring usually high school students, and the people around me, like, they're talking, and it's just like, they're like, all right, write about something. And they're like, and you can't write about Minecraft again.
That is insane.
And then it's just like, that's every single one. And they're just like, oh. And then it'll just talk about it for a good 10 minutes, and they're like, okay, well, we need to do something else right now.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, there are some people who are pissed about the Xbox One edition.
Oh, whatever.
The Xbox 360 edition. For me, I'm like, yes, add new features. Make the worlds bigger, because the biggest handicap of the 360 version is that there's a limit to the world size. Whereas in the PC one, I mean, all right, technically there's a limit there too, but you can go on for days, basically, in the Minecraft on PC.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many cool mods for it that I don't play because I don't play the PC version, but that I look at, and it's just fun to play with people, and I don't know. It just works great. Minecraft's an amazing game on any standard, really.
Hit it up, Tim. Two.
All right, my number two is Secret of Mana. I've got so many good memories of that game. It's an old SNES game. And essentially, it kind of takes, you know, Zelda-style gameplay, but with, you know, you have a party of three.
I've been wanting to go back. Do you think it'll hold up? Could I play it now and love it?
It'll definitely hold up for me just because I have so much nostalgia in that game. It's hard to say for other people with it.
It's pretty looking.
Yeah, it's got a nice graphical style. The story, nothing impressive, but, you know, it's basic. It covers it well. Got a decent soundtrack.
How are the mechanics?
It's fun. I mean, there's like a charging system to where, like, okay, when you attack, you have a little bar that comes up and it'll go up from like 0 to 100%. And so you can just wail on somebody, but then it only does like one damage. But when it goes up to 100%, you know, you'll do like 50 or something like that. So it's much better to get it to go all the way up. And it does it quick. It's like, you know, 3 seconds and sort of stuff with it. But then you can also hold down the button and charge up different levels for each weapons. And then there's like 8 varieties of weapons. You can get 8 different power-ups with them to use different special abilities and stuff with it. Mm-hmm. And then you got 3 different characters, you know, that have different spells. And you can, you know, bless the weapons and use different attacks. You can just, it's a lot of fun. It's just a ton of stuff that you can do. And you can, you know, program your AI to do specific things with it. You know, it's not very complex with it, but like, to strategize with it, or you can just play with another person. It's a lot of fun. It's just one of those games that I played the hell out of that when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I must have gone through that game 15 times.
Wow.
And I just have so many memories. Like, I remember every smallest detail about it.
For me, for some reason, I have this aesthetic memory of that game of being very green and lush and beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is very green, very lush and beautiful. I mean, that reinforces, you know, it's about, you know, nature. It's the mana tree is the big thing with it, and it's being destroyed.
And talk about a series that, like, every other one is just like not live up.
Yeah, and that's what pissed me off so much. Like the next one I played was Legend of Mana for the PlayStation, yeah. And it was just
people don't like it.
I just didn't like it.
And then it just got worse with things like Dawn of Mana on PS2, which is like not even an RPG technically because you don't level.
It just got
Children
weird.
Of Mana is a mess.
I've heard that's horrible too.
It's just it's just not fun. Like the original one because it's the Seiken Densetsu. Dentetsu, I think that's how you pronounce
Seiken
it.
Seiken Densetsu.
Yeah, that's the name of the series. So actually, the first one was a Game Boy game.
Yeah, it was great. That one was okay. It's great. It's the Final Fantasy adventure.
Yeah, I think it's an adventure.
It is.
That's a good game.
It is a great game. Yeah.
And that's an okay game with it.
And then they re-released as Sword of Mana.
Yeah, and that was okay too.
Yeah. I mean, I like those. I think they're fun. I really liked Adventure even before I knew.
If you like Sword of Mana, I mean, that's gameplay but with three people at once.
That's All right.
A ton of fun with that game.
I'll tell you another game that's a ton of fun, Tim. Speaking of fun.
What?
And that is Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Yeah.
That was on my short list.
I love that game. I remember I had a friend and I would go over there and that was our game. And we were so sad when it ended because it is just, it's so fun. I mean, it's just slashing stuff, playing as those characters. I think I mean, after the X-Men game in the arcades, which is another great co-op experience, by the way. It was almost like the next iteration of that. And you would play as these characters and run through like arcadey situations, but there was also like a circuitous, cavernous air to it where you had to like get lost a little bit. And the bosses were fun, and you know, another thing that was really good about the top-down perspective or the sort of isometric top-down was that it wasn't so descript that it looked corny. You know, because like you couldn't really see everything that clearly, like what it was. So maybe you'd see stuff from a different perspective that wouldn't make it look as, I don't know, jokey. It almost retains some of that comic book distance.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with those sort of things. Like, that was a game where it's like it wasn't amazing visually, but, you know, I think the visuals were good for being a comic book style stuff with it. Like, I didn't want to be blown away. I wanted there to be a feeling like I'm looking at a comic book and a little bit more, you know, what's a good way to put it? Imagination fantasy feel to it. I didn't want to make it look hyper realist.
Like, one of the many things the sequel lost was that.
Yeah. The sequel was. I mean, I literally
think the sequel gets way too much hate, but it wasn't as good.
I can't say.
I agree. I think I played it and went, I mean, it's not as compelling. It's something I was making this argument to a friend the other day is that addictive, solid gameplay is a very hard thing to manage.
Yes.
And sometimes you can take a bad game and tweak it just a little bit and you'll make a really good game. Ultimate Alliance went the other way. It took a solid formula, and all the little tweaks were just enough to completely throw off.
Which is crazy because they're all seemingly subtle.
Yeah.
Well, I think the biggest thing is it's like Marvel Ultimate Alliance felt like an action RPG. Mm-hmm.
They
Alliance
dumbed
2
it.
Just felt like an action game.
They dumbed it. Yeah. Way down.
Yeah. I think it was one of the first 360 games I played co-op online. It was one of the games that made me believe in the online experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a solid game. You get to play. It's fun to just go through it again and again with different characters and seeing how they level up and what new abilities they get.
Yeah.
And it just works. And it's a great game.
Awesome. Okay, Jordan, I guess go through your honorable mentions real quick and then your number one.
All right, my honorable mentions are pretty straightforward. One of them is basically Tim's number one, so I'll say it then. Basically, it is different. But my other two are the Lego games because I really love the Lego games.
I second that.
And they're solid co-op experiences, but I honestly just prefer playing them alone. Me too.
I kind of do too, honestly.
It's more fun when you can focus and you know what you're doing and you don't have to worry about and telling another person. I don't know. They're so fiddly at times. I just rather just know what I'm doing and do it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to wait for anyone. You can just 100% it on your own pace. The other one is another game that was one of the first co-op experiences I ever had, and that was Castle Crashers. Which I think is just
so
such
fun.
A solid game.
You got pretty much my honorable mentions there, except for one or two.
Yeah. I mean, Castle Crashers is an amazingly solid game. It is probably the best game the Behemoth has made. It is. I mean,
it's
love
just
Battle
so
Block,
solid.
But it's the perfect dissolution of everything they wanted in that game.
It really is.
But my number one game, surprising nobody, probably, is Borderlands 2.
What?
I mean, it's the perfect co-op experience. I mean, the thing that makes that game so work above Borderlands 1's. Going back to the Ultimate Alliance thing is the tweaks. They made so many small tweaks and new additions that just work well enough to shift it from a sloggish, boring experience. I mean, I'd compare the first Borderlands to Dead Island, honestly, in terms of fun. And Borderlands 2 just hits all the marks that it needs to be something transcendent as far as co-op gaming goes. It works
kind of like Dead Island Riptide, right?
Yeah,
I haven't played it, so I guess I can't comment.
No, I'm just joking.
But no, just it's so fun. I've played through it for, I mean, I've got over probably 5 days of game time on Salvador. I'll go through and play it with friends to help level up their characters when I'm literally getting no benefit from playing through the same stuff again. And it's just fun playing it and shooting things and finding new guns.
Is your guy super badass?
Yeah, Salvador's a boss. even if he is super short. Gunzerking. It's a great game, and there's more DLC coming. And yes, Borderlands 2.
Play I can't believe 5 days. That's crazy. Tim, number honorable mentions and number
honorable one. Honorable mention, most of mine would have already been taken on other people's lists, but one, Little Big Planet.
Oh, I was going to call it out.
Good honorable mention there. It's a great multiplayer game with it. Just fun to punch people, run around, jumping on things, you know?
We had a lot of fun. I played a bunch of that with you, Tim. And also the community level.
Yeah. I mean,
the vastness of possibilities.
Yeah. So Little Big Planet, honorable mention. But number one is Left 4 Dead 2.
All right.
Yeah. A lot of people love it. First Left 4 Dead.
I love Left 4 Dead 2 because it makes me realize why so many people love first-person shooters in a lot of ways. Because I don't like playing first-person shooters competitively most of the time with it because, you know, I run out
everyone's
there and I get shot a lot. Yeah, and
yeah,
most people are better than me with it, and it's just not that fun for me. And it's just like, I don't even have that much to do it. But it's fun for me to go with my friends and kill like 100 zombies and like, you know, watch each other's back and sort of stuff with it all the time with it, as opposed to getting yelled at me and called a faggot all the time, you know?
Ooh.
And yeah, it's just, I don't get that community in there, and it's just fun to just run through and kill zombies. Or, you know, even when you're doing competitive, you still got your whole team supporting you, and there's just diversity within the playing styles of it.
Yeah.
And that is the way they keep it, you know. I love the director AI in there because, you know, it never makes it outlandishly difficult for you. And so no matter what, even what you're doing with friends, you're still feeling that there's, you know, a good challenge, but not, you're never holding anybody back. And so it's like anybody can be playing with you at the same time with it, and it's still fun for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's so amazing with it, and yeah, I love that aspect of it. And it's just, there's so many times we just got to work together where it's like, all right, I'm going to be staying down here by the car. I want you guys to go up there and you over there. I'll cover your back so no smokers get you. And, you know, that never ends up working.
You always have to stay together
yeah,
or you will
die. You pretty
die
much got to stay together in those sort of stuff.
And
right
I think
there
that game, better than most, really forces teamwork.
Yeah.
You can play Call of Duty and like those co-op levels and like play on your own sort of, but that game you have to work together or you'll die.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like a person could be awesome, but you know, if they're by themselves and a hunter gets them, they're dead.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah. You are stuck. No buttons on your controller, no matter how deftly played, can get you out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as Left 4 Dead 2, I love that game. That's so fun. Whenever, you know, get a bunch of people together, that's the game I always want to play.
Yeah. Awesome.
What about you, Rich?
Well, it's funny you should ask. Obviously, I like Dead Island, but I play it single player, so I can't really comment on the co-op. I'm sure it's pretty fun. Castle Crashers is awesome. Halo 1, I loved playing co-op in that. I thought that was a really great, solid campaign. Gears of War 1, 2, and 3 are probably my favorite co-op shooters. I think that they are just so solid. Those mechanics, Cliffy B and the team at Epic here in Cary Raleigh area are really knocked it out of the park. Obviously, Cliff is not here anymore, but you know, that game is his baby, and I mean, it's just the mechanics are so tight and solid, and when you add, and then Horde mode, and then what was that mode you really liked, Tim?
Beast mode.
Yeah. There's just so many cool modes. It's just, I don't know. The Gears of War just got better and better as far as the co-op experience. But my number one is the game that started it all, made me love video games in the first place, along with Mario, and that was Contra. I know. I mean, first of all, the 30-man code was mandatory.
Yeah.
I wasn't going anywhere without that, especially at age 8 or 9 or 10. But that game is what got me into video games. I think I said this on a previous podcast, but my friend went and bought it, and at that point, I didn't know anything about video games, and I literally thought every video game was awesome because the one he happened to buy was Contra. and it was just so fucking good. I mean, it's just, those levels are fun, and I just it taught me so much that I needed to know about video games. The idea of fighting over the S when it would come, you know, you want the spread rifle that shoots out the spread, and we'd always fight over who got it, you know, and we'd always run away from the L because the laser gun sucked, you know. And it's like it's just all those kind of things. And like the guy I was playing with, it was what do you call it, like co-opetitive or whatever, what do you call it, like when you're sort of competitive and co-op,
semi-cooperative.
Yeah. But you know, he was always sort of against me. Like, if one of us was going to die, it was going to be me. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, yeah.
And that's,
you're my meat shield.
Exactly. Because
then you get to say you're the better player.
You died a lot.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it happens a lot in certain games. But, you know, I really learned how to, it was like co-op, but you fend for yourself too. I don't know. It was just so fun. That game is good single player too, but it's way better with two people. And just the, it taught me about, like, when you shoot, like, a red weak point. It taught me that concept, and it did it so well. You would shoot and it'd be like ding 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 ding. You know that
yeah,
that feedback it gave you that really made you feel like you were blowing the shit out of that little sensor, and then like the, and then it would be like a slight delay and then the wall would blow up. I mean, Konami just nailed that game. It's just so freaking fun, and it, I don't know, that really got me into playing co-op games. It was that we would play all the Mario games where, you know, you'd take turns, but they were still sort of co-op because you're both on the screen, you know what I mean? Sonic, you know, where two, where you could both be those. All those games were fun, but Contra's the one that started it all for me. So
it's good.
Yeah, that's gotta keep it old school.
That's the one. On that note, real quick, last minute, what are you gonna be playing this next week?
I'm gonna be playing more Lego games. I'm gonna try to get back into Metal Gear Solid 3.
All right,
and I might pick up Dynasty Warriors 8. It's I'm on the fence.
If you ever want to know what any of the characters did historically, just ask me.
Yeah, I'll just be texting Tim the whole time. Yeah.
What? Who's Wen She or whatever?
A made up character.
I know. Tim,
I'm gonna finish off The Last of Us.
Me too.
I'll probably play Antechamber, and I'll probably get
Shin Megami 4.
No, not Shin Megami
what?
4. Probably just play Antechamber. The other ones play some more Civ.
All right.
I might go through Antechamber as well.
And what is it? All right. I might get The Walking Dead too. I might get that. I'm not sure yet though.
Okay. Well, maybe take Jordan's advice. All right. And I'm gonna play. Excuse me. I'm gonna play. Finish up Riptide. Finish up Last of Us. And then I'm gonna play Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
Has that been over a year now?
It's been like a year and a quarter, or a year and a third.
It's bad. But also, we're all doing some game testing, so that'll be fun too. We can't really talk about it, but we've been doing that too.
Yeah. And as always, you can find us at thejoyofgaming.com, on Twitter at thejoyofgame,
or the email, which is thejoyofgamingpodcast@gmail.com.
Send us your emails, and on Facebook at The Joy of Gaming. And as always, keep playing and send us emails. Tell us what you're doing.
We love it. We love it. We know you're listening because we have all kinds of downloads. We just want to hear from you. My name is Rich Lepore,
Jordan Alseca,
and Tim McNeil.
And we will see you in a couple weeks. Bye bye.